This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
All right, Dave Petzo is back with us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KITO. So the border tax, I think it's a great idea. But Dave Petzo, the floor is yours.
Okay. I it's way too much. I don't mind him talking about things and looking at them, but this is way too much, so disruptive for retailers, and it's a totally different way of doing business overseas. I find it too risky, too disruptive to the way we do business, that it could really tank our economy. And it could, and it certainly is going to be one of those things with the way industries have geared up a certain direction. You're talking about now moving a completely different direction and therefore destroying so many businesses. Others would benefit, but when you gear up a business to respond to a tax code, I think we need to have some normal movement. Let's simplify, let's reduce the tax brackets on a corporate basis, but to have a border tax, that is frightening to, especially to retailers who are bringing things into this country. And our costs will go up tremendously if we have this border tax.
But isn't it the threat of the border tax that has caused a lot of these major companies to decide to stay in America or build plants in America, because we've de-incentivized them from going over and hiring the cheaper foreign nationals? And here's the other one. Look, if you're going to build in America, then you should have the benefits of being an American company, as opposed to going down to Tijuana or Zhengzhou and building everything for cheap and flooding our markets with your cheap products. We can't. There's tariffs on our products in China and Mexico.
Agreed.
So,
Kevin, I don't disagree that we need to have better trade agreements and we need to do this in a wiser way. But really, a job owning these companies into staying here, if we lowered their regulation barrier as well as tax barrier here, they would stay. They don't really want to make cars in Tijuana. There's other reasons why. The infrastructure, the corruption that there is in Mexico, all those things are things that you can avoid by just doing it in North Carolina. So you would rather stay here if you don't have a horrible financial incentive. A border tax, in my mind, is too disruptive. You're right. We need to do something to dissuade companies from going overseas, but I think they're doing a good job of that, and simplifying the tax code is going to be, I think, the final nail in the coffin of companies moving across the border. We don't need a border tax to do that.
We continue on with Dave Petzo here. Trillions of dollars are at stake when the president speaks to Congress. We're talking about entitlement programs. We're talking about military spending. How, if anything, will this impact our economy here in Idaho?
I don't think it will. I think all of this does in the long run. But as far as anything specific that comes out, as far as infrastructure spending, things like that, and the president probably needs to address infrastructure spending because he has not so far. And so that will probably be one of the topics Tuesday. So I do look for him to talk about that. But as far as any kind of specifics for us, no, it's just a matter of, is the economy going to continue to improve? Do people continue to move to Idaho for lifestyle choices? And I believe the answer is yes and yes. So the jobs here, the economy here will continue to boom.
And Dave Petzo with us once again, a cover story here from USA Today. Three reasons not to retire before age 66. Dreaming of an early retirement? Here are three good reasons to reconsider. One, you'll reduce your Social Security benefits. You'll have a longer retirement to fund, and you may get bored. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with all three. In fact, I think that it's just absurd that we continue to cling to this arbitrary age 65 number, or 66, whatever, as the official retirement age. When it was first designed, Social Security, very few people actually lived to age 65. And so it was a very easy thing to say, well, you know, let's get rid of grandpa. Because he'll only live for a couple of years, and push him out of the workforce so that, you know, a younger person could get a job. That was a fine idea and was very inexpensive for our society. Now it's become very expensive, healthcare, et cetera, but also for the individual. Human beings are built to work and to have if you will, an objective, a passion in life, a purpose. And when we don't, when it's just simply something that we just don't have a timetable on any particular day, it's not that people have to work if they can afford to, but they need to have purpose. And so finding direction, purpose, whether it's volunteering, taking parental duties with grandchildren, things like that, it's an important thing for all human beings to do. So
taking
the boredom thing is real.
Duties with grandchildren, that's why the kid, that's the kid's job.
You, well, I would agree with that.
You're not responsible for those kids. Hey, you do the crime, do the time.
I would agree with you, but it, but it is what a lot of grandparents enjoy, are a couple of days a week with their grandbabies. So that's their purpose, perhaps. And it is. I think it's a wonderful thing in many families. The families are growing back together, if you will, because of that. But at any rate, Kevin, people do need to make sure they put enough money away. And when we're talking about Social Security, so many people make this choice. We see it at our office all the time. It's such a human nature thing. Well, I chose Social Security early. Why'd you do that? Well, because I wanted to get my money. And I read somewhere you're supposed to, and that kind of comment. And so they already make the choice before they come in because they already know we're probably going to tell them they should wait for security reasons and for growth. It's an 8% growth rate on Social Security. And I know people are afraid they're going to die and not be able to collect and so on and so forth, or somebody's going to come in office and they're going to take their Social Security benefit away. I get all that. But unless there's health considerations, you need to put it off.
Hey, Petso, finally, will the market keep rolling?
Kevin, it, in spite of what everybody says, does, points to, what goes up must come down, blah, blah, blah. Here's the reality. For my whole life, for your whole life, for my dad's whole life, the market's gone up 10% per year on average. On average, 10% a year. But we figure out a way to try to figure out, is the market too high? What does the Shiller Index say? What are the P.E. ratios relative to interest rates? What are blah, 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 blah? We just fill it in. For why we're trying to time something that has done so much better than anything else and given you amazing returns. The point is will we have corrections? Of course we will. We had corrections when we went from 15,000 back to 14 and then ripped higher. Nobody catches those. You can't trade those. And for 10,000 points, I've heard nothing but people whining and complaining that the market was too high and giving me a litany list of all the things that are wrong. And they missed this entire rally. Why should I listen to them now? The answer is you shouldn't, but people will, because you sound more serious when you sit around, scratch your beard, and complain and moan and groan about how bad crap is. And that's what people do. It's human nature. I get it. But it's really missing the point that this thing works and corporations adjust no matter who's in office. We have a pro-business president, lower taxes, lower regulation. We haven't had that for 8 years. In spite of what we had, with all of the detrimental things,
sure,
the market ran. And now I think it's going to keep going, Kevin, to answer your question.
All right, quickly to Blake, who wants to talk about the retirement age at 580KIDO. Good morning, Blake.
Good morning. Just a comment that I never thought about until I passed 60. And there's so many of the folks that did like my folks did. They worked their bodies to the bone, do nothing but try to provide for their family and stuff. And we're not college educated, and it's a hard work life. I mean, we don't have the $100,000 a year income. We do our best.
Mm-hmm.
And, just seven of the guys that I rodeoed with, rode horses with, punched cows, I'm the only one. And I'm going to take retirement early because I plan on getting a couple of years where I don't have to get up 6 days a week and go work for somebody else and hope I've got enough money to, pay the power and stuff like that. I'm going to take a couple of years and actually have a life before they put me in the ground. And, yeah, that means I'm going to take early retirement. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm not embarrassed by it. I've worked for it. I've earned it. I've put it away where I can. And what I don't have put away, I'm going to rely on Social Security. That's just the way it is. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, Blake. Thank you very much. Dave Petso, that'll have to be the last word.
We can leave it. That's okay. People just need to be aware of their own long-term security. That's all. And we'll talk more about it another time.
All right. You're listening to Dave Petso, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if it gets a little uncomfortable. But how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is more important than your life? Someone who takes their eyes off the road while speeding along in a 3-ton hunk of steel. Freaky, right? Well, why not just ask them to stop? Or better yet, volunteer to text for them. It might be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and good morning, and thank you for joining us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. That's our number. That's our live number here right now, as well as email, dave@petsofinancial.net. More records, more record highs, more wealth made, and somehow people are more nervous. You know, what goes up must come down. Don't you think we should take some off the table? What about the impeachment? What about, what impeachment? It's because people talk about stuff doesn't make it so. But I get it. I get it on one level. But I want to talk about this very seriously, not just as a passing thing. I mentioned it when visiting with Kevin last week, and we just replayed that for my whole life, the market's gone up 10% per year on average. Not 10 each year, not even close to 10 each year. Most years, it's not even close to 10. It's up 15. It's up 25. It's down some. This is how it works. And when it's down a little bit in price, not in value, we decide that we are great traders. We would have, could have, should have done something, and my money's gone away. And it, of course, hasn't. You still own the shares that you own, whether it's a mutual fund, direct companies, ETF, whatever it is. Unless the market goes away. I mean, gone, poof. Totally out of here. No corporations exist anymore. The entire financial system has collapsed. And frankly, I don't know how to manage around that. I know some of you will say, hey, I've got it covered because I've got bunkers, guns, and food. Because if all you have is, food, people just kind of come after you. So you're going to need guns and a bunker probably. I don't know how to manage around that at all. And so when we're talking about something that's gone up 10% per year, which, of course, isn't just 10% a year, it's a really big deal. It's a really, really big deal. More than anything else, the value of single-family houses has gone up 1% more than the inflation rate for my life. Whoop-de-doo. I guess if I want to buy a job, I can, get calls to have plumbing issues dealt with in the middle of the night. So this thing, the market, sits over here and has professionally run companies, perhaps for decades, because you get to choose when you want to buy in or sell out. You don't have to wonder if this company is going to succeed. They've already succeeded if they're on the exchange. They may go down the tubes later, and many do. It's called creative destruction. But by and large, the entirety of it says it's up 10% since 1926. My dad's life, my grandparents' life, my kid's life. It's a gravitational pull towards 10. But we don't like to do that. We turn it into a trading game where we make statements like, you know, what goes up must come down. Like, all the way down? Is that what you mean? Well, I don't mean that. What do you mean? You know, I mean, come down. No, I don't know what you mean, come down. What do you mean? Like, what's the trigger, and when do you get back in? Because now we have to be right twice. And, of course, all of the great investors, let me underline a really important word in that sentence. All great investors, 100% of them, all great investors have said repeatedly, can't time the market. Well, anyway, we got it, though, because, you see, I've heard that since 12,000. I've heard it since 14,000. 15,000, it's too high. It's going to pull back. And you know what? It did pull back multiple times all the way from 800 on the Dow when I started 35 years ago to 21,000 now. 2 50% corrections, market crashes, currency crises, the list goes on to this unbelievable run. Yeah, it's so good, it's going to be not as good. Okay, they've said that for decades. Decades. It's always the same thing. What's remarkable to me is you hear people talking about, you know, there's some kind of a quotes. I mean, they just make crap up. It's just unbelievable. It's the same people that were worried about Obama because of fill in the blank. We're worried about the Fed, fill in the blank. We're worried about hyperinflation, fill in the blank. This guy over here, this guru over there, this former budget guy, this guy who's never called the market right in 25 years, we're going to quote him. How it's all going to end again and again and again. Same people. Now there's some kind of a shadow government being run by Obama. Really? Really? We choose that we want to believe these things. We want to believe that what's good isn't. We want to give ourselves heartburn. We want to fuss at 2 o'clock in the morning. We want to do this, don't we? Isn't that apparent to everyone? That we seem to want to do this. Why? It's because it's easier to be negative. You know, we all want to sound smart. We all want to be smart. We all want people to admire us for our brains. That's a smart guy. And if you just say that things are going to be okay, then you must be smoking something. You don't really think deeply the way all the troubled bears do. You're not a real deep thinker. You just don't realize all of the, you know, shadow governments, blood moons and Shemitahs, how we're going to have hyperinflation, how Greece is going to take down the world, how Brexit is going to wipe everything out. How a Trump presidency is clearly going to tank the market. It is astounding how if you are negative, bearish, consistently, you are absolutely never held accountable for the fact that you're wrong. And all of history says you're wrong. And you're going to be wrong tomorrow. But somehow we think that they're more thoughtful. Doesn't that strike anybody else as unbelievably remarkable? That we continue to parade around people that are perennially wrong as market
Smarty Pants? Wow. They don't call anything right. I mean, if the market corrects, they're right. Really? Okay, so from 800 to 21,000, and we pull back to 19, who's right?
I am.
I am, because I'm the dummy that just kept buying and holding. Not screaming that the sky was falling, and so I'm out of the market when it's 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 10. I'm not out. I'm in. And you got to play to be a winner. You can't leave. You have to play. You have to play. But there's always buts. Always buts. Always. Why it won't work. Why this time's different. But shouldn't we? But shouldn't we? What about? But it's just constant. And so we decide. I just don't think we sit around and go, you know, honey, what I'm going to do this weekend is I'm going to sit and fuss. I'm glad you're okay with that because that's what I want to do. I really don't want to see the grandkids. I really don't want to take a trip. I really don't want to smile and go out and enjoy a walk in the park. I want to fuss. I'm going to dig into some of this stuff and sit around and figure out what's wrong with everything. Wow. Who would think, wow, I think I married well, having a mate like that. It's insane, but we do it because we think we're being intellectual. What am I supposed to do, Dave? Put my head in the sand? Perhaps. That's not a bad strategy. Save money, put it away. Leave it alone. Boom. That's the magic. But we don't do that. So as we talk today, what we're going to talk more about, and Jim, hang on, and we'll grab you on the other side of this break. I want to talk about this, about all these, you know, well, what about this, or when should I? You know, for example, when should you sell? It's a great question. Vern, thanks for the question. Dave, it is inconceivable that the market will continue to rise indefinitely. Why not sell off some shares and lock in gains? At the rate of dividends paid, it would take a lot of years to offset the, say, $100,000 loss. True. True. And we'll talk more about why not. Or why, depending on your circumstances. Our number is 580-KIDO, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. It's Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. And if you have an email question, love to hear from you. Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. Jim, thank you for being patient.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you, sir.
Last week I called in to Jennifer and Tom, and I was bitching or mentioning a bugaboo about, you know, I've got this company that they paid what they designated as dividends. But then at the end of the year, they reclassify it as return of capital, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, value of the stock goes up and down, but you still have the same number of shares, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's interesting, okay, now, say you buy 100 shares and you know, for $1,000. Okay, this company starts return of capital. Okay, if you take it out to the conclusion, they may return you all of your capital, right? You've got a zero cost basis, but you've got 100 shares. Now, somehow or other, in this case, it's Microchip, their value is still pretty high, right? But if they returned all of your capital, then you really don't have a stake in the company. So can you have 100 shares that are cost basis zero, and still be entitled to the $10,000 a share that maybe the stock's gone up?
Right. The answer is yes, absolutely. It doesn't. First of all, you have to look at it this way. It's a good question.
if I get a return of capital, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm out of the stock? No, they're not buying your stock back unless you specifically tender your shares. You still have 100 shares. Now, remember this, though, that you're really talking about the tax status. You got a dividend, and instead of them saying, that's really not a dividend. It's not all a dividend. Maybe, you know, 20% of it, whatever the number is, Jim, is considered return of capital, which means that's a tax-free income to you.
Is that why? Okay, I don't know how often this is done, but is that mainly why they do that, just for tax status?
It is.
That doesn't seem to be good accounting at all.
No, it is. It's good accounting. It's mandatory accounting. It's part of the accounting rules, is to get it right. Is this considered interest? Is it a qualified dividend? Is it a return of capital? All three of those, you have to determine what it is. As a matter of fact, there's qualified, non-qualified, too, just to complicate things. I think there's five different ways a dividend can be classified, which is why it's so difficult for them to get it right and why we get revisions with our 1099s on brokerage accounts. So what you're really talking about, and when I say that with a specific company, most people, most of their money's in mutual funds or ETFs, and none of this matters, right? Because ETF takes care of all of that, and all you do is own something that's paying a dividend. Now, when you get into business development corporations, which today I think are an extraordinarily good idea, by and large, there's some good ones and some bad ones, but by and large, it's a very good idea for juicing income, because they don't try to grow your income stream. They pay out all of your income. And in a zero interest rate world, or near zero, this is a big deal to try to find pockets of income. But, Jim, I would not worry. It doesn't change one iota. Your 100 shares having a per share value of X is still there. You could sell it for that. You're entitled to whatever dividends per share are paid, even if 100% of your capital is returned, under all circumstances that I'm aware of.
The thing is, coming from an accounting background, it bugs the hell out of me, because dividends are to be paid from income that the company makes. And if laws are passed, for instance, I got one that they decided to change from dividend to long-term capital gain.
Right.
Okay, now, if the tax rate is better on long-term capital gain than dividends,
mm-hmm.
seems to me they're just skirting the laws. You know, the Congress passes a law saying, okay, dividends are going to be this, and long-term capital gain.
That's why
be
the
this.
Complexity of the tax code is absurd, Jim. I mean, we all know that, but these
yeah,
are this
but,
is
but
part
the
of the reason.
The company shouldn't break the law by doing
They're not
this.
Breaking the law at all. That's what I'm sure of. Hey, I got to roll. We're out of time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim.
Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. We come in a couple times a year to help Dave out.
Four times a year.
Four times?
It was four times last year.
Gotcha. But
a couple times.
A couple times. We try to come in as much as we can. We really enjoy doing this. You know, we've both worked with Dave for several years, so it's really it's a great place to be. We learn a lot from him, so this is a good opportunity for us to come out and actually share what we've learned.
Right.
So,
nope, it's fun.
Yeah, it is. All right, when we left, we were talking HSAs, and Tom said there was one other thing that he wanted to mention.
So there is a little rule that you can take money from an IRA and roll it into an HSA to get it funded, and you can, I believe it's up to $6,500 that you can, one time, that you can roll into an HSA and then have it taxed, then you can use it for medical expenses, and you don't have to worry about the taxability of the IRA that, say, you're 50 or whatever.
Yeah, it takes away the penalty and the taxation, correct?
Right. So it's a neat way of getting that started. But, again, you have to have all those other things in place. You have to have HSA qualifying health insurance plan and so forth. But and you can't do that if it's an HSA at your employer. It would be where you're an individual, have an HSA plan. But another great little opportunity to save some money.
Yeah. There's so many little rules.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you sit back and you think, how in the world does everyone keep track of all these little loopholes?
And you know, that's a great thing, but the interesting thing is this is all passed through Congress. So someone somewhere
sat back
said, hey,
let's
do this.
$6,500. Let's go with that.
Yeah, 79 and a half.
Right.
59 and a half.
Right, and I don't know what the half.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah, exactly. So it's but we could go into that all day long. A couple other things we wanted to talk about, too. This time of year when people come in, they're looking to fund their IRAs or their Roth IRAs, because you can do that up until April what this year?
April 18th.
18th. They keep changing it because of weekends. So it used to be April 15th no matter what, but now we're changing it to whatever day,
yeah,
I guess.
I don't know if tax day has been April 15th for 3 years.
Yeah. So you can fund for prior year IRAs and Roth IRAs, but there are income limitations with both for individual plans. You cannot go back and retroactively fund a Roth 3 or 401k. This is only done on the outside with the limits of $5,500 for people under 50 and $6,500 for over. But with that being said, if you have an employer plan, then a lot of times you do not have the ability to deduct income going into an IRA.
Right.
There are limitations there as well. So if you're working with a tax professional, be sure you know what you're funding before you fund it, or you'll have to back it out.
Right.
There are also income limitations on Roth IRAs. That's why a lot of people do wait to fund until the next year when they have all their income and they know what their adjusted gross will be, so that they don't have to back them out.
Right. Yeah. We do that with a lot of clients in our office, especially ones I'm doing taxes with, that we will. That's what we do as part of the process, is determine that and then fund it at that time. So it works pretty well.
So what are the income limitations for a single person filing single?
For a Roth IRA, the limitations to be able to contribute to one on the outside or individually is you can't put any money into a Roth if you make more than $133,000.
And that is an adjusted gross income number.
Adjusted gross income, that's correct. So you can have a little bit of control of being able to control that. It starts phasing out at $118,000.
Okay, so now I'm going to have you explain to people what adjusted gross means, because we say that to clients all the time. Hey, what was your AGI? What was this number, so we can do different things?
Right.
I don't know that everyone knows what that is.
Yeah, so adjusted gross income, you take your total income, usually it's salaries, maybe income from investments, then you get your gross total income, then you can take deductions from that. So it'd be like IRA contributions, student loan interest deductions if you qualify, educator deductions if you're a teacher. There's numerous ones. Those are the main ones. But or if you're self-employed, there's for your health insurance and premiums, there's a deduction there, and that reduces it down to your adjusted gross income. So you have your gross income, you have these adjustments, and then you have your adjusted gross income. Another important thing on this qualifying for these contributions is, if you are employed and you do have a 401k or a retirement plan at work, putting more into that reduces your gross income, because it reduces your reportable income. Therefore, you have the ability to put more into the 401k, which may allow you to put money into a Roth.
But remember, you have to do that through salary deferral, and
right.
Some employers have restrictions on when you can change how much you can put in.
Right.
Not as much as it used to be, just because it's so automated.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another reason to look at your taxes every year and see if, oh my, I was $10,000 short from being able to fund a Roth IRA, and I'm only putting $5,000 in my 401k.
Right.
And I could afford to do more. That comes down to that, too. So you can bump up your contributions to your 401k, which brings down your adjusted gross income, which then will allow you to fund potentially Roth IRAs.
Exactly. And also remember, if you have overfunded, if you funded a Roth IRA or IRA, whatever, and you can't, the income doesn't allow, you have until tax day to back those out, to get them out of the plan. Either you can then recharacterize them or have them reclassified as a current year. So let's say 2016, you put too much into a Roth IRA, then you can actually now call those contributions 2017 and leave them in your IRA account, or you can have them actually sent back to you.
And you do, if you overfunded, you can't just leave them in there. If you forget after April 15th, oh, I didn't get them done by tax reporting deadline. Now what? You have to get them out if you don't qualify, but they start to hit you with a tax penalty.
Yep. 6% tax penalty.
Right. So get them out if you've done it.
Yeah. So pay attention to that. And usually when you're doing your taxes, whether I'm sure with TurboTax, having used TurboTax or one of those plans, or with your accountant, make sure that you tell them that you're making Roth contributions. Because if you don't, then they won't know. And if they don't know, then they won't get caught. And then after the fact is not a good time to find out after April 15th or 18th this year.
Because they are reported by the fund that you've made those contributions.
Yeah.
So
And that's another important thing to bring up is there is a statement everybody gets. It's called a 5498 statement, and it confuses everybody. And so if you get a statement and it says 5498, that is not a tax document that you have to use to report anything on your taxes. It is just a document that tells the IRS what the what transactions and what has happened in that account during the year. So if you're saying you made a contribution, that is telling the IRS that you made a contribution. Or if you took money out, that is telling the IRS that you made a contribution. So, withdrawal. So when you get something that says 5498, you get them on your Roth IRAs, IRAs, and you will get them on your health savings accounts. Don't let it freak you out, especially if you get it after tax season.
And it's also a good check if you've done a rollover from a 401k to an IRA. You'll get a 1099-R with box 7 with a G, I believe.
Yep, it's a G.
And then the 5498 comes after mm-hmm. tax time. And what that does is verify contributions as well as rollovers so the IRS can verify what you did.
Right.
So if you do a direct rollover, that shows. But if you actually take it and do the 60-day rollover where it's distributed, you have to make sure that you code that correctly as well and get those funds back in.
Right, right. So. And that's when it gets pretty complicated there. But
yeah, we won't go into that.
But we won't go in. It'll break your brain a little bit. But the big thing is that when you get those forms, a lot of times they come out of tax season. Don't let it freak you out. And see, if you see 5498, you're okay.
Yep, that just verifies what you've contributed to IRAs. Right. So what a lot of times people want to do more to get their taxes reduced, and they want to contribute to a traditional IRA, which actually reduces your adjusted gross. But there's mm-hmm. income limitations with that as well if you have a participating plan, which means you have something available, whether you're doing it or not,
mm-hmm.
inside of your employer plan.
Right. And so I don't have the exact the income limitations, but there are income limitations. You need to verify that. Now, if you put them into an IRA, and versus what we were talking about before, not a Roth IRA, I'm talking about a traditional IRA, and you put them in, and they don't, and your income is too high, there isn't a thing where you need to get the money out, or you're going to be penalized. What those deductions end up to be, or those contributions end up to be, is non-deductible contributions, and that so there isn't a penalty or anything for you to do that, other than you're not getting the tax deduction that you had maybe had planned. So remember that if it's non-deductible, you have to know that and be keeping track.
And then the hard part with that is you lose track that you've made non-deductibles a lot of times. So they're mm-hmm. not my favorite thing to do.
Right.
Because people tend to pay tax on them twice. When they take the funds mm-hmm. out, they forget that they have what's called basis in the IRA, which
right.
means money that's already been taxed. When they pull it out, they get taxed on it again.
Yep.
And it becomes one of those hard-to-track things. So
yep.
don't do those unless – I mean, it can happen
right.
by mistake, or try to back them out just because it does become quite complicated.
Yeah, it can
later
be
on.
Complicated, and most likely you'll forget, or people will forget that they did that 20 years ago.
And you're responsible for it.
Right. Yep. So. Yeah, yeah. You have to keep track. So if you moved to different custodians, you moved to different advisors, no one's keeping track of that other than yourself.
Yeah, and make sure you have records.
Right.
Another wonderful thing about Roth IRAs inside of 401ks, there are no income limitations.
Right.
So if you have the Roth option in your 401k and you're trying to diversify in types of taxable accounts for retirement, take advantage of doing some in a Roth.
Yep.
If you're in a high tax bracket now, I understand you want to do as much pre-tax as you can just to reduce that taxable income. But if you can put just a small percentage, or I say when you hit 50 and you get that catch-up, so you can all of a sudden put in, what is it, $5,000 more
right,
inside
six.
Of a 401k? Six. You can actually put that towards the Roth piece. You've already
mm-hmm.
been paying tax on it for years, but now you're able to contribute to some Roth money and have that grow tax-free.
Yep.
And
yep.
come out tax-free.
Yep. And another thing on that is that on the outside, Roth is $5,500. When you do it in the inside, or $6,500, when you do it in the 401k, there isn't a limitation on how much you can put in.
As long as you don't go above
the
401k
right.
limits,
right.
of course,
right.
and the catch-up there. So we are going to take our last break of this hour. When we come back, we'll get into how do you save, how do you spend, what's the best way to budget. So we'll be right back.
Matters, hour number two upcoming. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And we're not here to tell you what to buy or sell and all that noise. And we're not here to get you to buy anything or to trade anything or to sell you on our new newsletter and our new
fangled program. Not at all. We're here to learn and grow together because it is hard. It is hard to rise above the noise. Super hard. Super hard. It's noisy out there. And all of it is just clamoring for your attention. And it is. Always is, you know. So we're screaming as loud as we can about the end of the world over here. And this guy's over here telling you another reason why it's ending. Because drowned out of all of that is the fact that no matter what, 16 years of Bush, Obama, nothing but increasing deficits, nothing done with Social Security, anti-business environment everywhere. Let's bring more and more and more government control into our lives, sucking our freedom away, sucking our money away, sucking our opportunities away. You say, oh, well, I don't really believe that, you right-wing nut. Fine. But let's at least admit on this, on an intellectual basis, that socialism doesn't work. Not economically. It's destructive. Every time you take money from something that's productive, human being over here, productive, working like crazy, doing great, building jobs, creating bigger and bigger empire for themselves, those selfish people, creating jobs and stuff. We need to take money from them because they have a little too much. So let's take money from them because, you know, we have to in the name of our moral judgment of who is the winners and who are the losers and who we can take from and who we can give to. We of course, because, you know, I'm capable of being godlike in that context. And so I know who to take from and who to give to. I have the purity of heart. And so we're going to take from productive and we're going to give it to government that runs nothing well. I mean, nothing well. And we want to take more and more from this productive and put it over here to this non-productive. It is not productive. It doesn't help the economy. It never has. Socialism experiment 193 isn't going to work either. 195 isn't, no matter how big your heart is. It won't work. It doesn't work. Economies don't grow under that kind of regime. And it's really simple. Taking money from non-productive and giving it, productive and giving it to non-productive is not smart. It doesn't help economies grow. It won't work. You could argue, but I want women's rights on this, and I want extra bathrooms. I want to be able to identify with, I mean, I did in high school, didn't you? I mean, seriously, guys, right? I mean, come on. I would have, like, if I could go shower with the girls, I could identify as I'm just wanting to be a woman, and this, so I should use this bathroom. Wouldn't you? I mean, it's crazy, but all these things are crazy. But they are social issues. It's not an economic argument. You want to argue that this needs more attention over here, homelessness or whatever it is that blows your hair back? Great. But I would argue let's find the most effective system for that. I mean, government doesn't do well at drug addiction. But the Boise Rescue Mission does. They don't do well at all in anything to do with, you know, in 6 months, these people have to be out. They don't do well with that. But places like the Boise Rescue Mission, they do. Places like Boys and Girls Club, they have kids that come there after school. They do a good job. How's the after-school program at the school? It sucks. It's a huge money pit. So there are certain things that we do that we do very well. But it isn't centralized planning. So socialism isn't working on that. And so as we kind of look at this argument, this is not a political show. We have to say through the last 16 years, how has the market done? In an anti-business, move money from productive to non-productive like we never have before. How is that working out for U.S. corporations? And the answer is, fine, could have been better, could have been much better, should have been much better. So what has the best investment been over the last 16 years? Is it
Gold? No. Is it real estate? No. Is it bonds? No. It's stocks. How about the 16 years before that? Mm-hmm, you know it. And the 16 years before that? Mm-hmm, you know it. You got it. You nailed it. You nailed it. You nailed it. You nailed it. For my life, my kids' life, my parents' life, my grandparents' life, since 1926, 10% gravitational pull to the equator, same as gravitational pull to 10% in the market on the long term. So we can guess. We can play games. We can dance around, prance around. We can cause all kinds of headaches and problems and concerns and lack of sleep. But it works. It works. But when do you sell a little bit? When? When do you sell a little bit? When you need money. You see, when the market is doing as well as it has, and it has had a remarkable year, rather than guessing the top in the market and turning this into an all or none type of thing, this is where I really believe people go wrong. If my long-term objective over the next 20 to 30 years is to, whatever, I don't need the money for 20 or 30 years, education, retirement, I don't need it for a while, then leave it alone and quit fussing about it. All you're doing is playing a game you can't win. You can't. So just get over yourself. You don't know what the market's going to do. You haven't known for several thousand points. Here's the analogy that you have to think of. And I think it's really important. Okay? 76% of the drivers think they're better than average. 94% of the college professors, 94% of college professors think they're better than the average college professor. What does that tell you? Now, without putting down college professors, it's fine. No, it's not. It's a human nature thing. The smarter you are, the more difficulty you have not thinking you're great. It's very hard. It's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. When you're super smart and everybody says you are. It's really hard to have the humility to say, I don't know. I'm really not very good at that. So people do. It's very hard. So before you make fun of the people that just, put their head in the sand and don't really know much stuff, and they just put money away, they save, and they live within their means, they don't spend too much money, they leave it alone in their 401ks, and then they wake up one day and have lots of money. It's not by luck. It's not. It's because they're not clever by half. They've not outfoxed themselves like the smarty pants do. Yeah, I got this thing. I know what's going on because I read, I read a lot of blogs and stuff and, intellectually superior. Remember this. You're walking through the casino on the way back to the buffet. You look at the roulette wheel. Yeah, it's the weekly buffet run you have. You live there and you just kind of, let's go. As you're walking by and, you think 13 on the roulette wheel. And you go, boom, 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 falls in. You turn right, honey, next time I have a feeling about that, I'm going to run over there. Because it's like, I think it's God speaking to me. He wants me to have money. I'm going to throw a fiver whenever I'm thinking of. We think something happened. You know what happened? The improbable. Let's say 13 is your lucky number, or it's your birthday, whatever it is, your anniversary, who cares? But 13 is the number that you always think of. You have for 35 trips to the flipping buffet. And, it fell in 10 or 23. It falls somewhere else, and you don't think anything about it. You don't say, save $5, honey. What are you talking about? Well, I was going to run over there and throw it on 13. Good thing I didn't. There's 36 numbers, and when this weird thing happens, that the 1 in 36 chance it falls in a hole, we think we've been talked to by God. Or you walk by a craps table, you think, for some reason you're thinking, eight's the point. It's like, hard eight. Boom! It happens. And you're going, wow, next time not next time. Before you walk by and it was a 2, it was a 5. You just never thought about it because it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary and it lifts us up in our minds that we are better than we are. You pick a stock and now all of a sudden you're a stock picking genius. You get out of the market and you think you're a genius because the next day it goes down 200 points. You're so smart. What you forget is that every time for the last 10,000 points that you've been thinking about getting out, getting out, getting out, getting out, getting out. And you were right for 5%, or was it 3%? Maybe it was 8%. Maybe it was the beginning of last year when the market went down 12% at the beginning of the year, first 6 weeks of the year, down 12. Did you get back in? Or did you get in at minus 10? Did you get in at minus 12? Did you get in at minus 8? I'll bet you didn't get in because you didn't. We already know. You didn't get back in. You missed it. Because when it was down 10, we all knew it was going to get worse. Because all those rock star people that predict doom and gloom, man, they are brought out of the bear dens. I mean, they are all over the place.
Yeah, you know, we've been looking for this market correction for so many years now. You know, I mean, we were bullish until yesterday, and now we just turned right over and got buried.
Of course you did, because you guys are geniuses. You're never right, but you're geniuses. All it serves when we do this kind of activity is to overchurn the account, cost tax money, and we can't figure it out. So unless you need the money, leave it alone. You're not that good. And as I've said a million times, we'll talk about it later. If we have time, we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it another time. Doesn't matter. We've talked about it many times. If you miss the best days, you miss it all. You miss all of the returns of the market by missing the best days. I'll give you the specifics later. Well, you say, because you're a smarty pants and you're really super smart, you know. Well, what if you miss the bad days? Well, you're not going to miss either. Let's be realistic. You're not going to miss all the good days. You're not going to miss all the bad days. That isn't going to be what happens. But guess what? They all occur. 70% of them occur right around each other. Right? The best days occur around the worst days. Weird. Well, yeah. Because you're going to be super trader. Like on Tuesday, you're going to get out. And on Thursday, you're going to get back in and catch that big rally on Friday. No, you're not. You will not. And so, therefore, you just have to simply say, okay, I can't do that. So, therefore, I am going to miss all the good days. Because they occur around the bad days. Huh. What do you do? We change our mindset. We change our mindset about what this is. It's not some game. It's not some game to figure out if the ball's going to fall in black or red. If you're going to make your point, you're not at a craps game. You're going to draw 21. See, I feel myself getting a little wound up here. The bad guys, okay? The scaremongers. They want you to think it's a big casino and you have no chance. Because then they can sell you a high commission package product based on fear that won't work at all. Instead of being in the greatest wealth creation ever. Nothing has worked anything like this. You put money in, other people do all the work, and they throw money at you. And if you ever want to sell, it's worth multiples what you put in. How is this hard? Why do we make this hard? Here, get rich, do this. Oh, well, wait, no, hold on here. Let me see how I can figure out how to mess this up. You mean to tell me that if I put away like $50 a month when I'm young, and then I go to $70, and then I go to $90, and then I'm doing $125, and I'm up to $200, like in my 401k, they take it right on my paycheck, tax deductible, don't do anything, and I put it in, that I'm going to be rich? Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. I want to do that. That sounds really, I don't know, scary, risky. I don't know. Is it a casino? I don't know. Yeah, you know, because it could go back and forth. We mess up the simplest, easiest, amazing thing and turn it into this weird game that allows the bad guys in, and they mess with your head.
I mean, seriously, if you really think that there's something, you're reading somebody that's doing this, don't. Why don't you take a nice drive? Why don't you grab your wife for a romantic weekend instead of fussing over the blog of how the world's going to end? Go see your grandkids. Stop it. You're not going to figure out the future any more than anybody else has. Except when something works this well, why would you just get in the way of it? Why are you doing that? Why are you in the way of yourself? Here's me on my way to financial independence. Let me see if I can figure out a way to stop myself from having that. I know. Let me see if I can overspend. I can get it, like, really embroiled in, like, boats and stuff that I really can't afford. And so I can't educate my kids, and I can't retire. I know stuff happens. That's not what I'm picking on. We all know that that's part number one. Don't overspend. Number two, invest. Save. Let it work. Leave it alone. Quit zigging and zagging. Let it be. Let it be. I know. I'm hearing the Beatles tune, too. I got it. Just let it be. That's all you have to do. And we spend so much energy, time, looking at why this time won't work. It keeps us out of what has. Nobody would intentionally try to figure out how they can dump themselves into a high commission product that won't work because they run around gnawing their fingertips off, afraid of everything, when there's absolutely no evidence to be afraid at all. None. Zero. It's always worked. For way longer than you've been on the planet. All because we arbitrarily decide that Procter & Gamble or Micron, it's not worth 25, it's worth 22. Oh, no, 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 my world is ending. Stop it. It can't be gone down 10%. This is the way we act, even though it's on the way from 25 down to 22, and then back up to 30 or 40 or 50 or whatever. Then we got Procter & Gamble. You know, oh, they've only raised their dividend for 70 years in a row. I don't know what they're going to do this year. Yeah, I do. They're going to raise their dividend again. This is what they do. There's no guarantee. Well, I can't do that then. I want to park my money under the mattress and lose a little bit every year to inflation. Perfect. Great strategy. But we can get in our own way, or we can just say this works even though there are bumps. Even though there are bumps. It works. Always. So when do you get out? When do you sell? When do you take profits? When you need money. Don't overcomplicate it. We can complicate it more. We can say, yeah, you know, it goes up a little bit. You can shift over here, and you should have tactical allocations. Yes, I believe all that. Of course you should. But this is not the way people do it. It's all or none. Market's too high. I'm out. Out and into what? And when do you come back? I don't know. You know. I have a feeling, you know, because I feel this. I kind of, you're not going to believe this, but, you know, I know when the market's going to tank. Actually, I had somebody tell me that. Well, really, that's fascinating. Guess what? He really didn't know. No, or that was many points ago. But that's how we think. That's how we think. If you need money, and the market's done as well as it has the past 12 months, there's nothing wrong with taking money you're going to need 6 months from now, a year from now, off the table. Nothing. Because you need it. And you've had a beautiful year. That's exactly what you should do. That's not a market timing question. That's being intelligent. That's intelligent trimming. That you need money. You're going to need money.
before, potentially before, the market can recover from a perfectly normal, certain to occur over and over again, all the days of our life, market correction. It's what it does. Why we freak out about normal is beyond my comprehension. I mean, it'd be like every day going, I'm getting older. I hate myself. I hate my life. I'm getting older. Then die. That's the alternative. Because we're all getting older. Or embrace. Why we can't embrace the greatest wealth creation mechanism ever is totally inconceivable to me. It's making it up. It's making up ways to mess ourselves up. Totally made up. But if you need money, that's when you take it. Not the day you need it. You plan for it. And man, have we had a beautiful year. So take a little bit off. It's okay. But only what you need. Or you can tactically reallocate from one hot area to one that hasn't worked so well. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Please do ring him up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you have any comments, questions during the week, and thanks again for those folks that took their time to let me know what a great job Tom Brown and Jennifer Stone did last week. And I sure appreciate those guys. They have just grown so much in what they do every day over at Petso Financial, but just really appreciate listening to them, and they just do a great job. So thank you for letting me know that as well. If you want to listen to any podcasts, they're there on our website. And as well, we'd like to hear from you. What do you want to talk about? And that's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. That's live right now. Otherwise, you can certainly reach us during the week at PetsoFinancial.com. All right, let's go ahead and go to our phones, and it's 580-KIDO. Sherman, thank you for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, can you tell me anything about this Safe Money Guy program?
What do you want to know?
What is it?
It's an equity indexed annuity. It's a high commissioned product.
Better stay away from that, eh?
Yes, sir. We certainly are licensed to do that if we chose to do that. We've never done that.
Yeah.
And because the products are high commission, they don't work, and they won't. You won't lose your money. It's not that the guarantee is wrong, but you're not going to make money either. So, I think we all know that. Your grandmother knew that, and she never got through ninth grade, right? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I thought. So thanks for your invite.
You got it. You have a great day.
Bye.
Sherman, thanks for the call. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-543-6, 580-KIDO. It's actually kind of tragic because what it does is it just feeds on the fear, as we've been talking about. Instead of letting things work and work out, there isn't any free lunch. There just simply is not. There's not. Hey, by the way, just on a kind of a local news basis here real quick, Micron actually was at a conference here this past week and said, we're not going to make X amount of money. We're going to make more than that, we think. Now, of course, there's no guarantee to that. It just says how well things are working out there. And given that they're such a large private employer, it's huge for the Valley when they're doing well. Bonuses are paid. Stock is going up. Lots of owners here. Lots of wealth created. It's great for the Valley, and it's great that Micron's doing so, so well.
Really, it's just fantastic. And to think that they came out this week and said, now, when we announce later this month, it's going to be a much higher number than you guys thought it was going to be. So, again, we saw the stock surge further this week. Now, remember, this is a company now. I know, it went clear up to $35, you know, like 18 months ago. But this is a company that was literally below $5 a share not that many years ago and looking bad. What a turnaround from potentially, you know, if the company disappears and those jobs go away or somebody takes them over and they move the facility somewhere else. That's a big deal to this valley. So it's a nice. Not trying to get people to jump into Micron. That's not the point, as you well know. But very important and good local news. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I hope to hear from you on the other side of Fox News. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. With Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436. 580-KIDO is our number. You know, it is interesting, and I don't know what it is going on with our phones, but we've had, if you called earlier, like somebody called apparently at the end of the last hour, and hey, give us a call back, we'll put you right up and go. Then the other thing is that Ronaldo wanted to let everybody know it's the phones seem to be glitzy. If you tried to call in, give it another try, okay? So we're not sure if they're 100% working. All right, let's go to an email. And by the way, the email address is dave@petsofinancial.net. Dave, you mentioned BDCs, Business Development Corporations, by the way. Okay, BDCs, Business Development Corporations. I'll circle back. We'll talk about what that is. A couple of quick questions. Are they more sensitive to rising interest rates than, say, dividend-paying stocks? Two, what percentage of a portfolio would one allocate to such an investment? I assume it would be small. Mike. Mike, thank you for the questions. All right, so let's define what a BDC is because there's many different kinds, okay? A, I want them publicly traded because the non-publicly traded takes a lot of money up front to pay huge commissions. Another big packaged product, okay? Be careful with those, all right? You don't want these private. There's a bunch of them out there because they pay huge commissions, so people market them like crazy. Let's stay away from those. I am talking about publicly traded ones. And as I say BDCs, I'm also talking about private equity firms, whether it's KKR on the private equity side, the largest, okay, whether it's Blackstone. These are companies that pay out tremendous amounts of dividends or earnings when they sell off these businesses. They're not trying like, say, a Procter & Gamble where they pay out a third, half of their income. And they retain the rest so they can grow. That would be your serial dividend increasers. And they're great. And it's a different story. It's a different line. What you're really looking for, or we look for, in income portfolios is we need some higher income vehicles than what are being paid in bonds today. And so that's where BDCs, private equity, come up to bat. And some REITs pay high income as well. Again, these are publicly traded, not the non-publicly traded, okay? So when we're talking about the business development corporations, to your questions, are they more sensitive to rising interest rates? They can be, but they're so much higher in interest rates, they're not really that susceptible. Most of them have a lot of their portfolios in resetting or floating rate loans that they put out in business development corporations, but that's something you have to look piece by piece. Don't get involved in ones where they have, say, a fixed portfolio, or most of it is fixed, then rising interest rates would have a huge impediment to them, okay? But they are not typically as sensitive as dividend-paying stocks, not even close to as sensitive as utilities, for example, which don't raise dividends, okay? And what percentage of a portfolio? Goodness gracious, that's a tough one because we're not talking about a set percentage as if you only want 2% or maybe 3% maximum of a high-quality stock in your portfolio. That is, in my mind, a hard and fast rule, okay, of diversification. But as a group, BDCs are talking about a very wide variety of potential investments. In other words, they're very diversified, or can be. So a business development corporation can be something that is investing in loans to businesses. Okay, it can be investing in loans on real estate that maybe banks aren't doing, so they get a little higher interest rate. Yes, higher risk. That's why you don't want one loan, want one company. They can be a combination of both. So what you want to do is you want to have different kinds doing different things, some private equity perhaps, some real estate perhaps, some real estate loans, some mortgage loans. So you have a combination of all of the above in order to generate income. But don't kid yourself. If something's paying you 8%, it has risk. If you can't find out what that risk is, don't touch it. It reminds me again, another gambling analogy, if you will, to a poker game, right? So the old adage of the poker game, you sit down at the poker game and you need to scan the table and find out who the pigeon is at the table. And if you can't figure it out, it's you. You need to be able to define the risk. You need to be able to look extensively at each of them and be properly diversified. But otherwise, I don't mind even 15, 20% of a portfolio if you're looking for high income, not really looking for growth. Need it to supplement the growthier pieces of your portfolio when you're trying to draw income. As long as it's properly diversified. Be careful of BDCs out there that are not publicly traded. Costs are high, returns are low, and the risks are the same. Why? Not buy businesses at below book value, below net asset value, however you want to phrase it. Why would you pay a 10% premium in a fully loaded and not have any ability to trade it? Just because. You know why people do that? Stable price. Because we pretend the price doesn't change. And people freak out by the day-to-day price changes in publicly traded securities called the market. Mike, thank you. Great question. I appreciate you allowing me to elaborate on BDCs. Our number is 580-543-6580 KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. Bill from Payette, would you call back? You can't hang on the line and then hang up. That's just simply wrong. That's wrong. We were excited. We wanted to talk with you, and there you were, waiting. You got to call back. All right, so do give us a call back. In the meantime, we have an email. And by the way, the email address, once again, Dave at PetsoFinancial, P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, PetsoFinancial.net, okay? And it's .net, not .com, okay? Net, .net. All right. Please do not use my name. Okay, I won't. Mary Smith. I'm kidding. Where and how should I put new money, a sizable amount, in the market? U.S., international, small, large, etc. With markets so very high, are there any lower attractive areas to invest, or do I wait for a pullback? Thank you, appreciative listener. Thank you for the email, and it's an absolutely brilliant question. It really is. Long term, this is the hardest part when you get a large amount of money or you've been trapped out of the market, which is millions of people, by the way, with trillions of dollars. You're not alone. I mean, people have been out of this market for thousands and thousands of points. They timed it, got out, never got back in. And all for good reasons, right? Because Obamacare was coming in, taxes were really high, it was sure that Hillary was going to be elected or Donald Trump was going to be elected, whatever, blah, 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 right? Brexit, Greek, Euro, all that stuff. And it's all real worries. Trap people out. So you're not alone. So what do you do?
Three things. One of three things. One, you have to define, do you need the money soon? Right? Are you trying to draw income on this, or is this a long-term investment? Because number one, this has always been true. The best time to invest is when you have money. That's it. Meaning now, put it in. Put it in, Mary Smith. Go ahead. Put it in. The problem with that is as soon as you do that and then we have a normal little correction, even a little correction, it's like we feel stupid. Even if we're on our way to 25,000 and 30,000 someday, not tomorrow, but someday, because the market always moves higher and it always has corrections in between. You feel stupid, and there's no reason to feel stupid. So I get that you can't really put it all in because no matter what you do now, it's stupid. If you stay out, you should have put in. If you go in, all in, and you have a little tiny correction, you feel like I would have waited, and then boom, I would have got in for like 5% less. No, you wouldn't have because down 5%, you would have waited anyway. So you have to define it now. So let's move to what most people really want to do. Do you need money? If you are wanting to draw income, I want you to take the full year, maybe even 18 months right off the top. Boom, put it outside. That's your income. Now we can stop worrying about the next market correction because you've already got the income you need now for the next 18 months. Okay? And then we're going to generate income. So if we're talking about income, it's a whole different ballgame. You've heard us talk about it many times, and that would take me way more than the rest of this program. Okay? To really deal with that and talk about it, about income generation, how to build the portfolio, and all of that, okay? And how we really want 3 to 5 years of money in our reservoir. But you can't put 3 to 5 years in cash earning zero. Doesn't work. So we have a lot of different, but basically, you need income, you need to set some aside right now out of your cash. Okay? So we can stop feeling like we're a loser just because the market goes down a little bit. All right, here's what practically. So we're talking about a lump sum of money. Most people that are thinking, let's say longer term, midterm, long term, what do I do to put it in the market? You decide amongst the following. I want to put it in over the next year. Say every month, boom, 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 or every quarter, however you want. Put it on the calendar. You do it. You don't play around with this. Simple, straightforward. I want it over the next year. I want it over 2 years. You start now, and you put it in every month. That's it. And then if the market corrects, yee-haw, you get good pricing down the road, better pricing down the road. Okay? Two. I don't like that particular one. What if the market, like, I get a correction? Should I take advantage of that? Absolutely. You can accelerate by putting it all in after a correction. For example, you start into this and bam, 3 months from now, 4 months from now, we get that little 5-10% correction that we get on average once a year. And you say, you know what? I know they're talking about the sky is falling, it's all over and all that stuff, but I've seen this before many times, over and over and over again. Everybody's going, oh, it's going to get worse, going to get worse, going to get worse. I want to take another chunk of money, whether it's 25% of the total, all of it, and I'm putting it in because I think the pricing's reasonable. Boom. Go ahead. You can accelerate the getting in anytime you want. Because remember, back to number one, what's the best thing to do with money you have? Put it in. Always has been. Markets always moved higher. Yes, it sometimes goes down in between the going up. So we put it in. So ultimately, you can accelerate that. The other way that a lot of people, I like this very much. Okay, so here's the deal. I want you to put 25% in now so we don't miss any future growth. If the market goes down, I'm going to put 25% in more. But in the meantime, every quarter, I'm going to add 10% till it's gone. That's it. Simple, easy, because we get money to work now. We start. And you set a profile that you are not going to sit around and read blogs and figure out why this time's different and you shouldn't do this, but you get started. And then the second part of your question really is a kind of a subtle one, and that is, are there attractive areas of the market? The answer is yes, and you're not going to like it at all. You're not going to like it at all. Because any attractive area, you're not going to like by definition. And everybody says, oh, well, shouldn't we be looking for a good outlook? And the answer, of course, is not. It's what we do in every aspect of our life. Do you want a mate that is healthy, that is responsive to you, that loves you, that is takes care of you, if you will? Or do you want somebody that's got all kinds of mental problems? We don't want that. So in every aspect of our life, we want the best. But when it comes to stocks, you want to look for a poor outlook. Why? Because prices are low. Emerging markets, foreign stocks, pay more, higher dividends, better valuations than U.S. stocks. Why? Because the outlook is not as good. But if you're looking for lower priced things, that's the spot. It's not super cheap, but it's much lower. Thank you so much, appreciative listener, Mary Smith. All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember this, patience is the companion of wisdom.